Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. In Mayo, God help us, many of us grew up with one of the expressions was, particularly when it came to immigrants, was with a wink and a nod, it would be said, now make sure you watch out for the neighbor's child, which had a mouthful, because basically that is your own as your own, and the many expressions having to do with a sense of pride, which became very parochial. It wound its way down from the provinces to the county to the town to the parish. Well, I have a guest in studio who is, there must be something good about him, even though he comes from Lewisburg, the other side of the Reek, Kirkpatrick in Mayo, from a place that we thought must have been, you know, the far end of the earth in the old days. He's parish priest of Knock. He is the rector of Knock, Knock Shrine, Knock Parish in the county of Mayo. First of all, let me welcome you, Father Richard Givens.
Thank you very much indeed, Adrian.
From Lewisburg.
Indeed.
And I think most people associate Knock in what made Knock the place that it is in the first instance, and the story of Knock itself goes back to, if my memory serves me correctly, to 1879.
Perfectly correct. Exactly.
What happened?
21st of August, 1879, Thursday evening. Rain, of course, but holy rain, maybe, you might put it like that. At 8 o'clock in the evening, approximately, light was seen at the gable end of the parish church. Now, the parish church was actually pre-Catholic emancipation, built in 1828, and dedicated to St. John the Baptist. And on that evening, in 1879, on the 21st of August, like I say, a light was seen at the gable end. Neighbours drew near. They were fascinated, so they drew closer to the church, and they came upon this apparition, this magnificent scene, this complicated scene, if you like, that depicted Our Lady, St. Joseph, her husband, St. John the Evangelist, and at the centre then, that was over to, if you're facing the apparition chapel as it is now, that depicts the exact representation of the apparition itself, to the centre was the altar, Lamb of God, a cross, and angels hovering around. Now, it was an extraordinary vision. It was an extraordinary, complicated vision. In fact, when people ask me, do I believe something happened? I do. And I'll tell you why. It's because it's so complicated. You couldn't make this up, even if you tried. So on that evening, 21st of August, approximately 15 people or more, local people, people living in the vicinity. Remember now, there was nothing in Knock.
Right.
Just the parish church, a little shebeen over our little pub, over a couple of hundred yards, where the actual basilica is standing upon now. And they drew there. The apparition lasted about approximately 2 hours. And it was raining, and at the gable end, according to the witnesses, and there were 15 testimonies taken afterwards, the ground was perfectly dry, as was the gable wall. The witness accounts give testimony to this tableau, to these particular representations.
Now, we should, again, for those who are not aware of Knock, or who may have a vision of the modern Knock with Ireland's only basilica, with you know, the highways with the very famous airport access to Knock. Describe, if you will, for us the area, the boglands.
Right.
And what is the profile of the parish?
Now or at
no,
the
no,
time?
No, 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 no. Back in...
Back in the time, it was absolutely rural. You were talking about Lewisburg there. In the beyonds. Well, Knock was certainly in the beyonds as well. There was nothing in Knock. Like I say, just a simple, small country church. The parish priest's house, which was within a couple of hundred yards. The land wasn't very good. Yeah. Stone walls, all the rest of it. Bogland as well, out towards the west. A small little road running through the parish itself. It was linked with the parish of Ahamore, so it was actually the parish of Knock Ahamore.
Yeah.
And in 1879, of course, the accessibility to houses and visitation by the parish priest, Archdeacon Kavanagh, was on horseback. Now, he didn't happen to see the apparition that evening. He came out, he came back from visitation, and he remained in the house after spending all day on visitation. But he happened to conclude 100 masses for the souls in purgatory at that particular. A lot of people associate that as, you know, some kind of a link there. But Knock itself, nothing there. There was a huge amount of agrarian violence, a huge amount of, the land war was going on.
Right.
So there were a lot of secret societies at work. A lot of threats even to the parish priest, that the parish priest was trying to keep things calm and get people to look reasonably at working out difficulties with the British and with the government and with landlords and all of that kind of thing. But some secret societies didn't appreciate that and threatened him. So there was a lot of tension, a lot of violence, a lot of discord. And so for something like this to happen in a remote place like Knock was extraordinary. And really not so extraordinary, even if you look back at scriptures, like the most, like even the Magnificat refers to the fact, you know, that the Lord raises the lowly on high and does extraordinary things through ordinary people. So through this small little hamlet, tiny little place, this apparition took place. Of course, in the years since 1879 to today, Knock has transformed massively. In fact, it was an unusual year. This was the year, 1879, that the doors of St. Patrick's Cathedral swept open for the first time. That link in terms of St. Patrick's itself. And one of the visionaries, indeed, immigrated to New York here and died here in 1943. He's buried in Long Island in the Cemetery of the Resurrection in Long Island.
What's his name?
John Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he spent his remaining years with the Little Sisters of the Poor, I think, in 73. So, not been over the years. The word went out, it developed, it grew. A society was formed in 1935 under Dame Judy Coyne, who felt that Knock needed to be better known. And
was there, I want to ask you this, my best years as Father Gibbons, was there a period of skepticism? Was there in hindsight, there are those who say that actually the diocese, that the bishops, those who should have perhaps gotten behind this from the very beginning, that there was a reluctance, and that stretched beyond the diocese to Rome, to the. This was not something that was taken lightly, and in fact, wasn't there if not a requirement at the time, but wasn't there evidence that was basically waiting for some form of miracle, some form of follow up, something that really had to put teeth into it. This is not like a fairy tale. This was very, very thoroughly investigated.
Oh, it was. There were two commissions of inquiry, one immediately after the apparition itself, instituted by Archbishop John McHale, the great John McHale,
right,
of Tuam. And it was, according to the best scientific evidence of the time, and the best inquiry techniques and methods, it was completely investigated. The witnesses were their testimonies were taken. There was even, well, of course there was skepticism. There was, they thought that this was kind of made up stuff and, you know, but, so the inquiry even investigated one theory that was called the magic lantern theory.
Right.
This was something kind of like, a precursor now to a projection onto,
right,
the, onto the gable wall. So that was supposed to be carried out. So they investigated that.
That could be the first miracle if one could have a projector ray on the gable in 1879.
Especially when rain was falling. So they investigated everything because they wanted, just like what you're saying, they wanted to make sure that if anybody had a criticism, if anybody had an alternative theory,
right,
let's investigate it. Let's check it out. No matter
and
how.
Bear in mind that the 15 witnesses who were there, they had no really relation to one another. It could have been any 15. They weren't going to mass. They weren't going to a religious.
No, there was nothing on at the time.
Okay.
No, on that evening at 8 o'clock. No, there wasn't. It was an August evening, so they were in the middle of harvest. No, like that they weren't connected, they, like it was a small village, so they were all kind of related,
right,
to some extent.
But they, again, just to get this out of the way,
sure,
the possibility of collusion simply did not, because again of the complication of the complexity of it,
yeah,
it would be nigh impossible to have witnesses all come up with.
Basically, the story would have fallen flat on its face within days if they were tried, because somebody would have talked. Somebody always talks.
Mm-hmm.
You never keep something like that quiet.
Mm.
In a small area like that, something would always happen in terms of if it was being met up. It was too complicated. If you want to say that an apparition occurred, you stick to the central figure like happens
right,
all over the world, with Mary. Just stick with herself if you want to. This was very complicated. And all the witnesses attested to that fact that of all these other figures that were present. So the investigation took place afterwards. They were, their testimonies were found to be true and accurate, as far as they could tell at the time. And a second inquiry took place in 1936. Before the death of the last of the visionaries. And again, that testimony revealed the fact that what I said and what they have said was true, and they were correlated in with the original testimony.
Right.
So they were found to be accurate in terms of their recollection.
Okay, break it down for us. There was the the vision, the apparition.
That's right.
How long did it last? What was the message, and how was that message delivered to the witnesses?
Right, it lasted 2 hours, 8 o'clock until roughly 10 o'clock on the Thursday, the 21st of August. There was no message; it was simply the scene. Nothing was spoken. There was nothing delivered. It was simply the scene that lasted for the 2 hours. And it was such a rich scene that later, in terms of looking at it from a theological point of view and a religious point of view, that at the heart and center is the altar, the Lamb, and the cross. That's, it is centrally a Eucharistic apparition.
Yeah.
So when we say, we often say, when Mary appeared, she brought the family with her. St. Joseph was there, and the Lamb of God, that unique motif.
Right.
And then the importance of Scripture through John the Evangelist, who appeared with a book in one hand and his hand extended as if preaching and wearing a mitre. So it's so rich that I'm grateful myself that nothing was said. In fact, I'm very thankful that nothing was said.
Right.
Because you get caught up in the whole, like Lourdes or maybe like Fatima or whatever, dissecting every single word that was said and all the rest of it. However, at Knock, you take the visual and you take from the visual then what is important in terms of the church at the time.
The pilgrimages to Knock and indeed for young fellows like yourself, I just found out actually that you weren't born until 1969, which is incredible. I mean, if you were to be a Jesuit, which is only be coming out, you know, you'd only be ordained around now.
I was taught by the Jesuits now.
Me too.
Oh, wait, okay.
Yeah, they deny it, but I know I have the paperwork. But a great, it would be, if there's anything that would have stood the test of time, was that the pilgrimage, the belief in Knock, the devotion to Our Lady, began in 1879. And it didn't have to wait for the again, our neighbor, Father Pat Payton, who in fact family Rosary, Rosary Crusader, and brought the family Rosary to the four corners of the world.
That's right.
There were those pilgrims who again were going in a rickety old road on bogland to go to Knock, not just from the Mayo and border county areas, but from every area of Ireland and beyond. So there was something. There was something amazing there. For many who feel that we got two for the price of one, then obviously Crowpatrick and the proximity to Crowpatrick, which is Lewisburg is in the backyard.
That's right.
But there were, and there are a great number of pilgrims that are now in the third, fourth generation, and that for many this is the symbolism not only of their religion, but also the faith under, you know, in inverted commas. This is and has been a great place of pilgrimage and worship.
Oh, absolutely. Over the years, absolutely. Even, like I say, when Knock continued to develop, it was there for people at the important times like the 15th of August, the 8th of December, important Marian dates like that, if you like. But also nowadays, we have a wonderful youth ministry that reaches out to the next generation and the generation after that, and to schools, and to give them that sense of understanding that the faith develops, different emphases come online, but it's there to meet the needs of every generation. And really, that's the pitch. It's Ireland's national shrine.
It's
the heart and core of, you know, of a pilgrimage destination for people, not only in the country, but people of Irish background, from Britain, and please God, from the United States, from New York here.
We had a shot indeed, particularly this year, being the final year of the mayoralty of Mayor Mike Bloomberg. For many decades, or as a matter of fact, for the history of aviation, there was no provision made for direct flights from the United States to Knock. Unimportant as to what rumors existed. Mayor Mike Bloomberg came back to Knock. Came back and cleared all the hurdles. Unfortunately, an airline, for that matter, nearly any airline, that would have gone in there were too small to handle what could have been and what still can be a great opportunity.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. You're perfectly right, Adrian. I suppose just maybe for your listeners, if they're not too sure, there is an airport built at Knock, built by Monsignor James Horne, who was the parish priest of Knock. Started in the 80s, finished in 1986, with the precise ambition to bring in pilgrims from abroad, but also to use it as an international hub for immigrants to the United States and to the continent.
It is an international
airport, absolutely. Yes. Most of our flights, though, however, are to the continent. It is growing. We had the best record last year.
Yeah.
There were 800,000, which might not sound like an awful lot of people now here, but the trajectory is up. It's increasing. So
and a huge boon to the west of Ireland.
Absolutely.
And to the northwest of Ireland.
It has a catchment area of 1.1 million people in the west. Now I'm talking about Donegal,
right,
into the Midlands, down south into North Clare, so to speak.
Right.
And this is the potential that Knock Airport has to get people into the west, to bring them in. Access Knock, access to, like, it's a bit of everything,
right.
not only just for religious pilgrimage,
yeah,
but a little bit of fun, tapping in this year of the gathering into their ancestry, into where maybe a spiritual homeland of
right,
you could say in terms of people's faith, and this is the year of faith as well,
right,
given Pope Benedict or Pope Benedict Emeritus has designated it that it's a year of faith, the year of the gathering, and a year maybe in which we can look at that again. And I think this is maybe one of the aspects that I'd like to highlight here,
right,
is the potential of pilgrimage from the United States,
right,
to Knock itself.
A Bohola man by the name of Ed O'Brien, who in fact ran several charter flights into Knock. I was privileged to be on the first charter flight from here. It is no longer in the a travel agent. However, there were a great number of people who were really privileged to see that the day actually came when there was a direct flight to Knock. This is long prior to the and it was magnificent in the sense that, you know, here was an international airport stretching from Kilkelly over to Knock itself, but that in this magnificent airport, that this was the tongue-in-cheek butt of many a joke from those who actually had the power.
Yes, from officialdom. Yeah, absolutely. From officialdom. Yes, it was. Yeah, it was called the
Foggy Boggy.
Foggy Boggy Hill,
Foggy
but
Boggy
but that Hill. Didn't, you know, the West has got a lot of insults over the years, so it was kind of like water for ducks back to a certain extent. Once you have a vision in mind, once you have a plan, once you can see where you're going, you know, begrudgers, you can leave them to the side. They're not interested in your vision. But, you know, in terms of, having said that, in terms of government aid and help and all of that, that is still critical to the airport, and it's still greatly appreciated. But I think the potential in terms of really getting the airport going is certainly from a pilgrimage point of view.
Right.
And I would love to see an opening up again of a transatlantic route.
Absolutely. And hopefully that will happen. One of the things, though, that I think we can't skip over, because without Monsignor Horden, there would not be an airport.
You're right.
And he, in addition to his great vision and his expertise, actually was more than aware in the beginning that this would be very helpful in the development of an area that was pretty much abandoned.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if the Bowl Monsignor Horn knew that if you put an airport in that place, that there was an encashment area as big. I'm trying not to get myself into trouble here, but as big as Shannon.
Yeah.
And an encashment area, but also that it would bring in, as it has, inward investment that would bring in.
Indeed, absolutely, to boost the area economically. But like it's not only that too, but like Knock and in terms of the shrine itself, it's like I say, it's a national shrine. It's a shrine that's open to everybody from everywhere all over the island itself.
Right.
And their own ancestry and people. And like in this year of the gathering, we have a number of dates designated specifically towards the gathering that people are welcome from all over the country. So say, for example, you have the Flannelly Clan Rally, and it happened to be either in Attymass or in Wicklow or whatever the case may be. We have dates set aside that why not bring the family to Knock?
Right.
Why not tap into the faith element of that? Because that is real. Because when people, when the Flannelly's came here, or when the O'Reilly's came here, or when whatever came to New York or Chicago or wherever it may be, that the tangible, real association for people was in terms of their faith and in terms of the local church. And I think that is important, and that should be acknowledged.
The gathering, obviously, is a focal point for visitors and for tourism, and this is the year 2013. I think, though, in fairness, what we ought to acknowledge is right throughout the United States, there have been groups, pilgrims, who weren't indeed checking to see what dates were set aside. They would, come to Ireland and make that pilgrimage to Knock as part of their visit
and their celebration. Exactly. Yes,
That is what I think we ought to think about in terms of the gathering.
I think that would be very important, and that's what one of the things said in St. Patrick's. It's important that we link that in. That people's faith is important to them, and people's association with that. And why not, you know, it's...
And we're talking about roots,
We're talking about roots, yeah. And you're talking about, you're talking about something real and tangible. And you're talking about something that gives people a sense of hope into the future as well. And all of this has to be part of even our own renewal of the church in Ireland, which is badly needed. And I think it's the kind of can-do attitude of Irish Americans, and your attitude is kind of, it's different to ours to a certain extent. So sometimes we might be a little bit sort of down in terms of what has happened and all of that, and dealing with the narrative that has been abuse and all that kind of thing. However, you're freer in terms of the expression of your faith, which I think we have lost to a certain extent at home, and I think which we can rally to again.
There have been periods like this in the past.
And this is precisely what you're right. This is precisely what you have to keep looking at. That, you know, there are troughs. There's, I think it was Cardinal Dolan said, there are resurrection moments and there are death moments. And once you move into one, it doesn't mean that the other isn't there, that the resurrection is always there ahead of you. If you keep that in mind, if you keep the fact that there's hope and continuity, then I think you can build
infrastructure, roads, accommodation for many the long year. There was indeed a problem in that if you had a tens of thousands and sometimes more than 100,000 people coming into Knock, you couldn't get a cup of tea, never mind accommodation, never mind.
Yes.
Well, the Celtic Tiger did bring accommodation. It brought roads. It brought access. So you are talking about, actually in every aspect of accommodation, from the bed and breakfast to the hotels, to to luxury hotels. We know that tours to Ireland, including CIE tours, there's access, and it is now not even. And this is only in the last. I said it started about the year you were born. I mean,
in the last 30 years or so, and we have a number of hotels now, a number of closed as well due to recession and all of that. But however, the potential is there, and food, accommodation, all of that. The needs of the modern pilgrim are a hell of a lot different than 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
And they're acknowledged as such. And I think, you know, that can be catered for requirements. And discerning those requirements, that's part of the attraction as well.
But there are a great number of people here who, like the Ed O'Briens, like the those who brought in the charter flights, don't need any help from any of us. Because it is not new for them to organize their trip to Ireland and take in the national
shrine, and take in the scenery. And take in the scenery and take in. And it's not just for this year. Like, you know, I know 2013 is the year they got. That's fine, but we're looking a little bit beyond that too.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more.
This is only the kick. This is only the kickstart.
It's the kick in. Exactly. Yeah. It's the kick in.
Yeah.
And so it's certainly tapping into that down the road. I think the potential is there. I'll be working for it. I know.
Yeah.
And I'll do the best that I can. Mm-hmm. I'm in the job a year now, and please God, you know, we have plans in terms of the renewal of NOC itself, such as the basilica, such as, you know, other aspects. So it's
let's
all
move to the chicken and the egg, okay?
Yeah.
You get an airport in the middle of no place, and it's not just an airport, an international airport, second to none, any surveys. And even the critics, the begrudges, are able to verify that this airport is amazing. How do you wind up with a basilica? And how did that come about?
Right, okay. Well, James Horne, again, he's called the builder of Knock. He began a basilica in 1973, concluded in 1976, finished it in 1976, and it was built for the centenary of the apparition, which would be in 1979. So it was felt at the time, because pilgrims were coming, and because of the weather being inclement and all as it is during the summer, they were getting wet and all that kind of thing, so a shelter was needed. So the basilica was designed and built to just keep people under cover. It wasn't built as anything beautiful or anything.
Can you describe a basilica? What separates a basilica from a massive cathedral, even?
The only thing that separates a basilica from a massive cathedral is that it is given the title by the Pope himself personally.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an honour from the Pope. There are four major basilicas, which are in Rome, and then there are, I think, about 1,500 minor basilicas all over the world.
What about the design? Is it a common design?
No, there's no common design.
No
there isn't, no. When the basilica in Knock was built, it was simply called on the plans, believe it or not, Church Shelter. That was on the plans. And it was built just specifically to get people in undercover, so that you could bring a huge amount of pilgrims undercover and celebrate the sacraments. So
it's an octagon.
It's an octagon. Yes, that's right. The altar is at the centre. There are five chapels surrounding it.
Uh-huh.
It holds roughly undercover 10,000 people, about 4,000 to 5,000 seated. So we have that on many occasions during the year. Indeed, not unbelievably, the basilica would be full, absolutely full, especially for the 15th of August.
Oh yeah,
grandparents' pilgrimages, all that, a number of other pilgrimages. We had the National Eucharistic Congress there the year before last, and that was massively attended.
Amazing,
absolutely amazing.
And papal visit.
Papal visit. That's when the church of Our Lady of Knock, as it was in 1976, finished, like I say. In 1979, the Pope visited and raised the church to basilica status.
Mm-hmm.
And so the basilica itself, it has lasted, it has done its work since 1976.
Yeah. But okay.
Yeah.
It is great, it is marvelous to have a basilica, particularly if they're few and far between.
Yes, there's only one other basilica on the island, that is in Onlochdurg.
Mm-hmm.
That is a basilica, but this is really...
Another area of pilgrimage.
Yeah.
But let me tell you that you have a basilica.
Mm-hmm.
1976.
Mm-hmm.
How, in the name of God and on earth, do you maintain a basilica? Take any church, any cathedral for that matter, you know, any even purpose-built building.
Mm.
And fast forward, like how...
Yeah, it takes a lot of maintenance. Like I say, it's there since 76. At the moment, it is tired.
Mm.
It's jaded. It looks
What's
old.
What's the structure? I know there are a lot of...
It's a mass concrete building.
Mm.
Like I say, it's not beautiful now. The inside, there are chairs, quite old chairs now. They're there since 1976. And they are in need of replacement. In fact, we have plans for the absolute refurbishment of the interior of the basilica to make it far more comfortable, warm, upgrade the lighting, the ducts, the heating, all of that needs to be. Technology has advanced so much since 76 that we need to make this a modern basilica for a modern Ireland and a modern pilgrim.
Yeah, I'm sure there are those who say, well, you have a better opportunity to do that, considering that at times you can get 10,000 people and pilgrims. And but that you bring in thousands of people, and there's not a day of the year that Knock does not bring pilgrims.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a day of the year that there aren't several masses taking place.
That's right.
And if you take all of that, the ongoing maintenance must be a nightmare.
It is. Like, we've over 100 acres of grounds alone. We have the basilica, we have a museum, we have a counselling service, we have a reconciliation chapel that sees at the height of the season 5,000 people per week attend confessions there. 5,000 people per week.
So much for those who say, who refer to confession and penance in past tense.
This is extraordinary. And most of the confessions do take place at pilgrim sites as well. Like, in ordinary parishes, it's not so big, no more, I'd say, than here. But at pilgrimage sites, and in Knock in particular, because it's known in terms of that for reconciliation. So we have 5 confessionals. We have the apparition chapel itself, the parish church, the old church, as we refer to it very fondly. Blessed Sacrament Chapel, hotel. We've the grounds themselves that are kept up to the best standards that we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
A number of departments. And all of that takes time, effort, of course, money and all of that. So it's very difficult. It's not easy. And while our numbers are quite good, our income has fallen through the floor.
Right.
To be quite honest.
And I'm sure that...
plans need to be made for that.
And I would say that the stroke that caught the Celtic Tiger only made matters a lot worse.
Yeah.
Do you get... Is there government... local county councils and various levels of government that do help, that have...
No, there's no government aid whatsoever for the church, none whatsoever. There is a local county council, I have to say, and I've commended Mayo County Council for this, in terms of the upkeep of the village itself per se.
Right.
But that's not shrine
right.
responsibility. But Mayo County Council do the very best that they can, and I have to commend them.
Yeah,
exactly. And I have to commend them for that. But naturally, they can't pay to help me with the upkeep or the refurbishment of the basilica, because they just, A, it's not done, B, they don't have the money anyway, and it's really the church's responsibility. So basically, as far as I can see, the need for the refurbishment of the basilica itself, which has done a wonderful job for the last 40 years or so, 37 years, needs complete renewal. And I think this ties into the whole aspect, and I do believe this, that Knock will play a very strong role in the renewal of the church in the country. I believe that myself personally.
Yeah.
My predecessor, Monsignor Joe Quinn, believed it. And we spoke often of how we could see this happen. And we can see it in a number of ways. Obviously,
you know, the bar was already raised pretty high by the time you...
Oh, Lord, you're telling me.
Yeah.
You're telling me. And like on the day I was appointed, I went over to the graves to James Horn, Dominic Greeley, Monsignor Joe Quinn, and I said, God, what have I landed in here with the legacy that those men have given? And I have to commend, I have to pay tribute to Monsignor Dominic Greeley at this stage. He was the guy that really consolidated everything after James Horn.
Right.
But for him, you actually wouldn't have an airport. And but for him, you wouldn't have Knock itself really the way that it is, because he consolidated what James started out. Monsignor Quinn then, pastorally as well, really took the shine on a different level. However, it's work. It's the generosity of pilgrims, it's the generosity of people, and I think if people can be given that understanding and that conviction that Knock will play such an important role in this, which is what I believe, I think people will help.
You know, you got the attention of Cardinal Dolan of New York, and he wasn't waiting for you to come along, because he, and indeed the Archdiocese of New York and his predecessors, have had a great affinity for Knock. Cardinal, going back to Cardinal O'Connor's time. There was a great focus on Knock during that period. And that continued right through Cardinal Dolan. But tell us how it is that on, St. Patrick's Day, and for those who are wondering about St. Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's Day, to some here, started at the beginning of the month, and to some degree is still going on, but two specific days for the largest parade in the entire world, bar none, was Saturday the 16th and Sunday the official 17th of March. How did you, as rector, as parish priest of Knock, wind up delivering the homily on both days?
Providence. It is an extraordinary thing.
A blow in from Lewisburg.
Thanks very much indeed, Adrian, for that. It was always in the nature of Lewisburg to land something like this.
Is that one of the miracles of Knock?
It was an extraordinary thing. The Cardinal was visiting. He's a great affinity for Knock.
Yeah.
He preached at the National Novena a number of years ago when he was Archbishop of Milwaukee. And he's a great love for Our Lady of Knock, great affinity. He visits the shrine any time that he's home or any time that he's back in Ireland. And last year, because Ireland hosted the International Eucharistic Congress in Dublin, he came in with a group of pilgrims from New York and came to Knock on one of the days. We knew that he was coming. And so we hosted a lunch. And during the course of the lunch, we were just talking. And I was just exactly what I'm saying to you in terms of pilgrimage and where I saw Knock going and how I'd like to see maybe an opening up of that to the United States and to New York in particular. And I wanted to get his thoughts on that. And I said, I might come over in the spring and maybe talk this further through with you. And he said, he turned to his secretary, Father Jim Cruz, lovely guy, and he said, Jim, who's preaching for St. Patrick's Day? Jim said, nobody, Eminence. And then he turned to me, and he pointed at me, and he said, he told me, you're preaching for St. Patrick's Day. And my jaw metaphorically fell to the ground. And it was an extraordinary invitation. I was taken aback because I recognized the significance of it in all the world, like you say.
Absolutely.
You know, bar the parade in Castlebar. Like it's a magnificent parade. Like it's, right. It's second to none. I gratefully and accepted. He gave me a slap on the shoulder, as he does. And I said, what will I preach on? And he said, you preach on Knock. So it was an extraordinary
I think
encounter.
Also we ought to emphasize that this was an invitation which was issued to you for St. Patrick's Day and indeed for the New York St. Patrick's Day parade day, that this was done before there was any hint, directly or indirectly, that, you know, smack in the middle of this, we would have, for the first time in 600 years, a retiring pontiff, and a lot. So this was separate and apart
completely.
From.
Completely, yeah. This was June of 2012 that he issued the invitation.
Right.
And up until he was just going to Rome then. In fact, he rang me the week before the Pope resigned to see how things were going, and he was very gracious
and to make
sure that I had my words together.
That's right, and that indeed, coming from Lewisburg, that you would fit those words in a timely manner. Because
That's no problem for Lewisburg people. So,
but you were to come to New York at a time when nobody would know better than Cardinal Dolan himself about the need to refurbish, to rebuild, to secure,
renew.
And here is the St. Patrick's Cathedral. You could hardly see St. Patrick's Cathedral with all the scaffolding
That's
done there. And gathering money and getting during a period, you know, of great economic downturn, getting money for St. Patrick's Cathedral, which one would assume, well, that should be duck soup, is not so. It is a struggle.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know, to that end, maybe, just maybe, the need for renewal, the need for, you know, with a with a new pope, with a new commitment, maybe there is something there. Maybe
I think,
the time
I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right because you know, with that understanding that you know, there's a certain kind of air, you know, a certain quality in the air, if you like, in terms of maybe now is the opportune time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say back in Knock when I'm trying to encourage the people and when I'm trying to say, well, let's have a look at the future. Let's plan.
Mm.
You know, a basilica was built in the 1970s during a recession. An airport was built during the 80s during a recession. Well, why can't we plan? I'm not going to hang around waiting for an end of a recession because we just can't do that. Because that's not acknowledging the reality on the ground.
There is one aspect to this too, and I welcome this opportunity because we really don't have you know, much opportunity to bring this up without starting yet another or extending a controversy.
Mm.
There is a lot and has been a lot of criticism. Some of it justified, a lot of it not, with respect to the clergy, the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
There is also it's not a campaign, but it is a recognition that you know, that some of the orphanages, that some of the, for instance, the Magdalene laundries, that some of those areas are also being painted with the same brush. I think for those of us who grew up in the west of Ireland, and indeed for those of us who grew up anywhere in Ireland, we all were the beneficiaries of the clergy, of the church, and the nuns, the sisters. Just what brings this to mind is that the nuns and the sisters who were associated with Knock. I'll tell you, you wouldn't want that job, you know, either. Pilgrims, a tremendous number of handicapped people, many who came to Knock for devotion, others who came to Knock requiring an enormous amount of help and care and help. You know, that's again.
Yeah. Don't
throw out the baby
with the bath water. Yes, yeah. Indeed. You know, you're right in terms of. I think it's too soon for an overall, I suppose, review of this. We need to kind of walk through, as we say back home, you need to walk through Gethsemane for quite a while yet.
Right.
In terms of this.
Give us the website.
The website is www.knock-shrine.ie.
My guest friends, Father Richard Gibbons, the parish priest and rector of Knock Shrine, and Father Richard Gibbons, you're very welcome to New York.
Thank you.
You're listening to Irish Radio Network USA.